Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbilly, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT. Striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. 531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, Black on black homicide by gun violence. What is causing the increase in gun violence, and particularly in the African American communities? Well, these certain African American communities. Guns are designed to do one thing, kill, or end life, be you hunting an animal or a man. From the conversation, shootings kill more than 36,000 Americans each year. Shootings kill more than 36,000 Americans each year. That's the whole melting pot. The World Atlas stated there was 58,220 U.S. soldiers that died in the Vietnam War, which the war lasted from 1954 to 1975, but active combat units from the United States entered the war in 1965. So that's a 10-year period, right? For U.S. soldiers, right? Combat units entered in 1965. 58,220 died in that war. That's where everybody had the gun. You had bombs, you had planes, you had tanks, mines, all kinds of contraptions, right? They're there to kill, right? So that's 10 years of active U.S. combat units fighting in Vietnam, yielding 58,000 deaths, 220, right? And 2 years of violence in the U.S. during supposedly non-wartime, yielding 36,000 times two, which is approximately 72,000 deaths in 2 years. 10 years in Vietnam, right? U.S. Soldier deaths were 58,000. In 2 years, we got 72 in non-wartime and a so-called civilized society. Something is wrong with this picture. Anyway, back to the conversation. They said every day 90 deaths and 200 injuries are caused by gun violence. Unlike terrorist attacks, the everyday gun violence that impacts on our communities, they say, is accepted as a way of life. Which is odd. You know, how can death be a way of life? Anyway, all the firearm homicides in the world, they said, right? All the shootings in the world, 82% occurs in the United States. An American is 25 times more likely to be fatally shot than a resident of other high-income nations. So they're talking about the most developed nations. The odds of dying from firearm homicide are much higher for Americans who reside in cities. They said 20% of all firearm homicides in the U.S. occur in the country's 25 largest cities, even though they contain just over one-tenth of the U.S. population. That was data from the CDC, they said, right? It showed that 12,979 firearm homicides in 2015, right? Of those, 81% occurred in urban areas, in the city, right? It's like New York, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, you know. The CDC data also show that within our nation's cities, Black Americans are, on average, 8 times more likely to be killed by firearms than those who are white. The rate of deaths by gun homicide for Black people exceeds those among whites in all 50 states. Why does we're going to exceed something? This is what we're going to exceed? Murder? Murdering? Dying by gun violence? That is not a good race to be ahead of. The combination of being Black and living in an urban area is even more deadly, they said. And, you know, and from what I see, this is not even an exaggeration. This is, like, right on point. Americans are 120 times more likely to be killed in everyday gun violence than by any act of international terrorism. And a Black person living in an urban area is almost 500 times more likely to be killed by everyday gun violence than by terrorism. The U.S. Census Bureau, just to give you an idea about concentrations of folk. New York City had the largest number of people reporting as Black, with about 2.3 million, followed by Chicago, 1.1 million. Detroit, Philadelphia, and Houston had between 500,000 and a million each. Among places with 100,000 or more Black people, yeah, Gary had the highest percentage of people reported as Black, 85%, followed by Detroit with 83%. The 10 states where 60% of African Americans reside were New York, California, Texas, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, North Carolina, Maryland, Michigan, and Louisiana. Five of these had more than 2 million Blacks each. New York, California, Texas, Florida, and Georgia. It appears that we live in an extremely violent world, depending on where you live in America. Americans are killing Americans at an alarming rate. In fact, the mortality dwarfs wartime fatalities, as I just read to you. The Vietnam War all wars are vicious, I use that war as the last war that they was just, you know, getting it in. That had to be a nightmare for people. You had to come out of that thing with your sanity is amazing. It seems like it sucks to be Black living in an urban area. So being Black and living in an urban area alone can't be the sole cause of so much gun violence. Not everyone is violent in the Black community, right? Anybody running around shooting, killing people. Yet, there appears to be a lot of gun violence in the urban areas in Black neighborhoods, disproportionately, right? What's going on? What's causing the increase in gun violence in the African-American community? Let's take a look at as many things as we can. Brainstorm, if you will. All right? So we're just going to throw some things out here. They say there's a saying, you never bring a knife to a gunfight. It makes sense. If you do, you are almost likely to lose that battle, right? There's another saying, guns don't kill, people do. That is a fact. No one has ever been murdered by a gun. They are murdered by people using a gun as a tool to murder, which is what the gun is designed to do. Right? This is a spinoff from a Bible saying, goes, the Bible saying says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I think it's Matthew 7:12. When a spinoff goes, do unto others before they do unto you. That's some street ideology. You reap what you sow. What goes around comes around. Hurt people. And last but not least, vengeance is mine. Another spinoff the Bible. Now, I know there's some more things that I could have said in me, you know, in regards to these ideologies and or chains of thought. A lot of these ideas appear to be floating around in the air. It is true. Violence begets more violence, and gun violence begets more gun violence. The question is, what circumstances or conditions might facilitate the attitudes, feelings that perpetuate gun violence? There lies the dilemma. What is it about people that they choose to murder other people? What is it about people that they choose to recklessly, right, murder, placing the lives of innocent people in jeopardy in their pursuit of murdering someone? You know, I think it was New York. A guy was chasing a guy down the street, trying to shoot him. The guy that was, I guess, the victim. He ducked behind two kids walking down the street. The guy continued to shoot at this guy. Eventually, the shooter was arrested. They should have arrested both of those guys. Anyway, what is it worth killing and or dying for? What is worth spending the rest of your life in a cell with two thin bunks, another person in a toilet? Spiritually, one might say there is little to no connection to the Creator. Not everyone believes in God or in a God. Some adhere to ethical and moral laws that provide a guide for life and the well-being of men, mankind, right? Some appear to have no regard for such guidance. Some people just have, like, thou shalt not kill. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Whether you believe in the Creator or not, you can argue with not murdering people and treating people the way you want to be treated. And I hope people would want to be treated with respect. I'm just taking a high road on that. All right? So I was just thinking about, wow. So, you know, they got this thing they call sin, depending on, you know, what you, your religious background may give. But I'm just thinking of the seven deadly sins. I said, let me look at that, see. You know, that's not anything that's in the scriptures per se. I just use it as to express an idea and to have a conversation. So I looked at the seven deadly sins and see if, you know, it's, you know, because sin is thought as a separation from God, right? Or a reason for conflict leading to gun violence. Some might say sin, period, you know, is bad. It's not the seven, is any sin, right? I'm assuming these sins lead to the commission of other sins and eventually murder, or could, you know what I'm saying? And as I said, these seven deadly sins not listed in the scriptures. Just using this as an idea, right? So there's lust. You know, lust is a strong passion of longing, especially for sexual desires. Well, the desire to engage sexually with someone's intimate partner expressed visually and or physically. This can be viewed as disrespectful and an assault on the male's manhood, not to mention this an assault on the female's as a person, right? Then you have gluttony, which is excessive eating food. The only person you're going to hurt doing that is you, unless you're stuffing food down somebody's mouth. Then they have greed, which is excessive pursuit of material goods. And I thought about that. A lot of people in a greed could work. Anybody could be greedy. You could be rich and be greedy. You could be poor and be greedy. So to want or desire in excess of something, it depends on how you go about acquiring those material goods, how bad you want them and how you go about getting them. If I'm greedy and I want 10 pairs of sneakers, but I don't have the money to pay for them, but they all cost over $100 each, then there are ways I can go about getting them that might cause people harm, right? Economic deprivation that prevents individuals from achieving perceived cultural goals could impact on the individual's method of choice as to how to obtain those goals. Sometimes it leads to violence, sometimes death. Some people will go to extremes to get something they want. Some people will go to extremes not to be punished for wrongfully obtaining something. Greed facilitates social and political economic deprivation. This may impact on a person's sensitivity to being disrespected. That would be an impoverished individual, or an individual who was not satisfied with their social or economic status. Then they got this thing called sloth, excessive laziness or failure to act and utilize your talents. Well, failure to thrive or succeed at doing right can lead to success in doing wrong, which most definitely can lead to gun violence, right? Then we have wrath, right? We all familiar with wrath, right? Wrath is a strong anger or hate toward another person. Well, I mean, that's really self-explanatory. If you have strong feelings of hate and anger towards someone, it increases the risk of seriously harming or killing them. Such is the case for violent attacks and revenge killings and shootings. It's almost impossible to be patient with a person who has threatened and assaulted you or someone you care for. Going to the police will not stop an assault. I mean, we would like to think that's the way it works, but it doesn't work that way. Envy, intense desire to have an item that someone else possesses, right? An intense desire to have what is not yours can lead to theft, robbery, carjacking, kidnapping, and violence. All can end with someone becoming a victim of gun violence. I suggest you keep your hands off other people's possessions. Respect what is not yours. Then we have this thing called pride. Pride is an excessive view of oneself without regard for others. Right? Now, pride has probably killed, maimed, injured, crippled, disfigured more people than war. Still, there appears to be more contributing factors. So, as I mentioned before about the seven deadly sins, they don't exist in order anywhere in the scriptures, but Proverbs 6:16-19 lists these things: a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. These things are things that we as individuals need to try to avoid. And I'm suggesting that, hey, if we had a little more of this, you know, in our lives, maybe it would help us turn this thing around. Each and every one of these things can lead to discord and violence. Each of these can be overcome with seven corresponding virtues they had, right? So they had kindness, cured envy, right? Temperance kills gluttony. Charity or love cures greed. By putting charity and love, probably kill all of this, cure all of this, really. Because if you love something, you're not going to hurt it. You're not going to steal from it and stuff like that. That cures, they said that kills greed. Chastity or self-control kills lust by controlling passion, right? Humility kills pride by removing one's ego, and boastfulness, therefore allowing the attitude of service. Diligence or zeal cures slothfulness. Patience kills wrath by taking time to understand the needs and desires of others before acting or speaking. There's also the 42 laws or confessions that, you know, just things that you could use to just guide you to making your life better, making somebody else's life better. If you make your life better, you're going to make somebody else's life better. Now, that may sound corny and even weak to some, but we need internal fortitude to fight this demon, because this demon is within us. We must have the strength to change the things that we can, each and every one of us. Change us for the better, and people will benefit from our change. For example, Malcolm X changed, and many of his people benefit from his change. Society, his community benefits from his change because he no longer committed criminal and unethical acts. If we don't draw the line in the sand, we are doomed to cross it, and in doing so, co-perpetuating our own jeopardy. Could a ceasefire be more painful than perpetual eternal homicides? I'm just throwing that question out. I know it's hard. Somebody kills somebody you care about, close to you, a child. I get it. But could a ceasefire be more painful than perpetual eternal homicide? Because if we're going to continue to be in pain and be on this hamster wheel, you know, if we don't have the internal fortitude to do something different, we have to. And we're getting caught up, as my friend Stevie says, we can't get out of our own way. It appears that the absences of such virtues could be major contributors to the issues and conflicts that lead to violence. These virtues and more are supposed to be taught and reinforced in the home first, religious institutions, and perpetuated in the community. The absence of adherence to spiritual guidance or ethics and morals may be indicative of the deterioration or absence of strong family values. Thus, the destruction of the family unit and the adherence to norms that are contrary to the ethical and moral values that guide healthy social interaction within the family, community, and religious institution, placing all at great risk. historically, guns have not always been prevalent among African Americans in America. As we know, for the most part, Africans were an enslaved people, and a gun in the hand of an enslaved people transforms that population into an army of self-perpetuating freedom fighters, or Black Panthers. One might argue relaxed gun laws are the reason for the increase in gun violence, right? So what is this thing about guns that Americans have? Where the hell did it come from? Gun rights advocates have ways of relentless battle to gut what remains of the Americans' lax and inadequate gun regulations. In the name of the Second Amendment, they are challenging the constitutionality of state and municipal may issues, regulations that restrict the right to carry weapons in public to persons who can show a compelling need to be armed. I have to be armed because I'm guarding money. I need to be armed because I'm a detective. I need to be armed because I work in a field that's dangerous and that a firearm is required. How about that? So a few courts are starting to take these challenges seriously. But what the advocates do not acknowledge, and some courts seem not to understand, is that their arguments are grounded in precedent unique to the violent world of the slaveholding South. All right? So they said regulations are unconstitutional, have been rejected by most federal appellate courts, right? They are honoring this, your Second Amendment, right? Right to bear arms. So that's the big deal with why guns not going away. Doesn't explain how we went from having because I remember shotguns, 22 calibers, 25 calibers, 38 used to be the big gun, and the 44 Magnum. That used to be it. Now we got stuff to shoot right through a house, in about 3 seconds you get about 10 rounds through a house. So anyway, until last year when the California court broke ranks and struck down the San Diego public carry regulation. This year the court did the same with the District of Columbia's rewritten handgun ordinance, right? If the justices buy this expansive view of the Second Amendment laws in the states such as New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Hawaii, with the strict public carry regulations and some of the lowest rates of gun homicide. So they say New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and Hawaii have strict public carry regulations. You got to really prove why you need a handgun or a concealed weapon. And some of the lowest rates of gun homicide, which would be avoided as unconstitutional, right? Which would be voided as unconstitutional. Their gun restrictions, public carry restrictions would be voided because it would be unconstitutional. But they have strict laws and they attribute them to the decrease in gun violence. Basically, the Second Amendment states a citizen has the right to bear arms and does not specify the need to show a compelling need to be armed. Some states disagree with this idea, so I can see why these guys be arguing about that, because you're not adhering to the Second Amendment. Public carry advocates like to cite historical court opinions to support their constitutional vision, but those opinions are, to put it mildly, highly problematic. The support of precedent they rely on comes from the antebellum South. That's after they pulled their feet of slaves, right? It's rooted in a culture of slavery and honor, very important that I'm mentioning this, because this word honor, by focusing only on the sympathetic precedent and ignoring the national picture, gun rights and advocates find themselves venerating a moment at which slavery, honor, violence, and the public carrying of weapons were intertwined, right? Okay, so they said the most enthusiastically embraced by the public carry advocates is none versus the state, right? And said the court decision was written by Chief Justice Joseph Henry Lumpkin, right, in 1846. As a jurist, Lumpkin was a champion both of slavery and of the Southern Code of Honor. Y'all, I don't know if y'all remember the movies. They show them guys having them duels and stuff. That's what they're talking about. So, anyway, none was the first case in which the court struck down a gun law on the basis of the Second Amendment. The U.S. Supreme Court cited none in the District of Columbia versus Heller, its landmark 2008 decision, holding for the first time over 200 years that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to possess a handgun in the home for self-defense. While courts or gun rights advocates think Lumpkin's view of the right to bear arms provides a solid foundation for modern firearms jurisprudence is puzzling, they say. Slavery, honor, and the associated violence spawn a unique weapons culture. So this whole thing is about being armed and violence is not new. It's not a black folk thing, but it is occurring disproportionately to black folk. But it's not anything of their invention, right? Southern men thus carry weapons both as a protection against the slaves and also to be prepared for quarrels between free men. Now, we got to remember that the Southerners, they lost the war. Now, the people, the slaves is running around saying, I don't got to listen to you. They probably get hung for that. But they got that attitude, I don't have to listen to you, I'm a free man. And the Northerners who defeated them are coming down trying to exploit whatever they can. I think they used to call them guys, what, carpetbaggers or something like that. Anyway, these guys are like, you know, saying like, you know, hey, I may have lost the war, but you're going to respect me. Slaves, you know, you're not equal to me, and you Northerners come down here acting like you, you know, say something I don't like. Bang, right? So that's just, guys are all up in their feelings. Here we have the origin of the cultural gun violence. It appears to be driven by fear, protection, retaliation, intimidation regarding slaves and northern freedmen. Two groups of Southerners have been in deadly conflict with, right? They have been in deadly conflict with the slaves. I don't know if y'all know the slaves fought all the time. They kill plantation owners frequently. And, of course, you know, the Northerners came with the war. Gun culture perpetuates the demand for guns. In theory, if we control the amount of guns that are available, you can control the amount of gun violence. So, basically, they want to control the degree of lethality. That does not scratch the surface of why people murder. Okay, because we're going to take, like, New York. People still dying from gun violence, right? Because, yeah, they have this, okay, it's hard to get a gun. Everybody's not getting a gun from the gun shop like that. Everybody's not doing it the legal way, right? As early as 1840, antebellum historian Richard Hildreth observed that violence was frequently employed in the South, both to subordinate slaves and to intimidate abolitionists, right? All right. In the South, violence was also an approved weapon to avenge perceived insults to manhood and personal status. All right. That's a culture of violence. Does that sound familiar to anybody today? So we are black folks, not the inventors of this. I'm sure we can perceive violence as an approved way to avenge insult to manhood and personal status, especially if you lost the war. If violence was a way to address insults and avenge personal status, then why wouldn't it be the same today? A guy in his feelings or who feels insulted may feel the need to retaliate with gun violence to save face or defend his reputation or sense of manhood. As I said on another show, I asked this guy, this young boy, a couple of years back, I said, why y'all shoot so much? He said, well, if I fight him and I beat him, all he gonna do is go home and get his gun. He should come back and shoot me. So we just skip the fight. Skip the fist fight, go right to the gun fight. So I was like, wow, you know, pride. Nobody want to take butt whipping. And if you don't want to take a butt whipping, don't put yourself in that position. Don't sell no wolf tickets. Don't put yourself in that predicament. Anyway, according to this guy, duels appeared they had, like I said, they had the duels down there, and they were frequent and almost a daily occurrence in the South. You hear that? Okay, now we got people who lost the war, so they feel they have been knocked off of their horse, right? And then they had people coming down there telling them what to do with the people. Whether, I don't know how they might perceive people as things. They might have perceived black people as things or not people. Or you're going to tell me how to treat this thing that I've been walking on for 200 years, 300 years. I've been walking on this thing, doing what I want to do with it. Now you're going to tell me I got to treat it like I treat my white friend. So, you know, that's a lot to deal with for a guy that's been in the habit of doing what he want to do with a person's life. Two of the most feared public carry weapons in pre-Civil War in America, the Arkansas toothpick, that's like a sticker or something, a sword or something, and the Bowie knife were forged from this Southern heritage. So these Southerners seemed like they were some angry old boys, lost the war, but they was coming back slowly but surely, letting you know, we may have lost that war, but don't disrespect me, I kid you. That seemed to be the thing that's coming that I'm getting out of this story about these antebellum Southerners and, you know. So this whole thing about carrying a concealed weapon, gave men secret advantages and led to unmanly assassinations. You know, Abraham Lincoln was shot in the back of the head right after the war ended, Washington, D.C., right? So they viewed, some of them viewed, you know, concealed weaponry as unmanly and led to unmanly assassinations. I don't even know what that means, but some Southern legislators accordingly passed laws permitting open carry, but punishing concealment. Now, I don't know if y'all know about that. They do have open carry states. I mean, you got a gun, you can see it, you are right. Right? They oppose concealed carry, which they deem unmanly and not constitutionally protected. So today, most guns are concealed, and having a concealed weapon is not considered unmanly. It is considered cowardly and egregious to shoot indiscriminately into a crowd of people or in the presence of children. Yet children continue to be amongst the injured even while their in their mother's womb. Continue on the article. History reveals strong support for strict regulation of carrying arms in the public. Now, how many people think that a lot of the shootings that we hear about, those guys just got that gun from a legitimate, they were supposed, if the cops stopped them, came in their house and saw that gun, that they wouldn't arrest them for. And they might have got it from somebody. We were going to talk about how they're getting guns, how guns are being got, and things like that. Anyway, in the North, publicly carrying concealed weapons was much less popular than in the South. The South was about that gun, and it was about that challenging people with that weapon. In Massachusetts, no person may go, there was a law, no person may go armed with a dirk, dagger, sword, pistol, or other offensive and dangerous weapon without reasonable cause to apprehend an assault or violence to his person, family, or property. Well, I don't know how you're going to do that if you don't have it on you before something happens. I don't know. That don't even make sense. And some of the laws don't make sense, that you can have it if you're trying to defend yourself, but if you don't have it on you, you can't defend yourself in defense of people who carry concealed weapons and things like that. If you don't have it, you bookie out. You know what I'm saying? You're about to get, you know what. Anyway, they kept having this argument about this here gun thing. Like, you can see, this is a gun country. We live in a gun country. This is a gun culture. This country was founded on gun violence, perpetuated on gun violence, maintained through gun violence, and that's why people have such a love for guns. Plus, you need it to defend yourself, because once one man has a gun, right? If 10 guys in a room, one guy pulls a gun out, you need nine more guns. Because now you didn't change, you switched the tune. You didn't took the slow song and you didn't speed it up. So now we all got to dance a little faster. We got to dance to your beat, because now you leading. You saying, in order to compete with me, you got to have one of these. So you got a handgun, you got to get a handgun. If he has a weapon made for war, you have to get that, because you're going to be outgunned, guarantee you. So that gun violence perpetuates gun violence. You might argue that today's present wanton, reckless shootings and homicides would qualify as a demonstration of a clear need for a gun. That's arguably correct. Because if you don't have a gun and you out there and somebody try to shoot you or something, you can't defend yourself. Many innocent people are becoming victims of gun violence. Maybe if someone was in possession of a firearm, the assailant could have been stopped. Maybe more people would be injured or killed, because the bullets got to go somewhere, right? The more guns, the more bullets fired. Those projectiles, they got to go somewhere. The people don't always hit their target. What about the availability of firearms? Where did they come from? We're going to talk about that, because apparently they're bought legally, some of them, a lot of them. Like, some people might think they're being stolen, which some are. We have a caller. Let's let this caller in. Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought. Hello, could you turn, you have some noise in the background.
It's not you.
Hello?
Everyone.
Hello?
for a relationship, that's usually how they start.
Okay, I can't. Hello, caller, I can't hear you. There's a lot of noise in the background. If you call back, please. Thank you. 5392. All right. According to the 1994 ATF, right, study on sources of crime guns in Southern California. You know, they was rocking and rolling out there, the Bloods and the Crips, MS-13 and all that, right? I don't know if MS-13 around. Yeah, I think they were around 94. Many straw purchases were conducted in an openly suggested manner where two people walk in the store, right? Me and you, right? So I select the firearm, then the other one uses their identification because they are not a convicted felon to purchase, and they pay for the gun legally. Or several underage people walk into a store and an adult with them makes the purchase. Both of these are illegal activities. Duh. The next biggest source of illegal gun transactions where criminals get guns are sales made by legally licensed but corrupt at-home and commercial gun dealers. All right? Another large source of guns used in crimes are unlicensed street dealers who either get their guns through illegal transactions with licensed dealers, straw purchases, or from gun theft. These illegal dealers turn around and sell these illegally on the street. Okay. The more guns that are available contribute to an increase in gun violence simply because it arms more people and sometimes more of the wrong people. So why are some people so volatile, so violent? Guns are just a tool people use in the commission of a crime. They aren't the cause of violence. Instead, it is a confluence of a wide range of societal problems that is currently leading to the violence in the U.S. And we have some problems in society. You know, this is from Generation Z conservative, right? They're saying we had societal problems that is currently leading to the violence in the U.S. Problems lead to a weakened society, which causes gun-related violence, they say. What about social, political, economical deprivation from poverty? In both the United States and globally, gun violence is strongly correlated with both poverty and inequality. This is a recent World Bank study found that inequality helped predict the difference in murder rates between states in the United States, as well as between countries. Suicides, which make up the majority of gun deaths in the country, skyrockets in times of economic distress. Suicides increase when we have economic distress. The Great Recession alone was linked to more than 10,000 suicides. The new scientist, U.S. Judge Morris Hoffman, check this out. Homicides are driven largely by male-on-male battles for status. As I back over, he said he looked over his three dozen or so homicide trials that he resided over. He said he perceived what the root of the battle was. These guys were he said it was a precise type of battle at this root. So these, one, they had a commonality, these couple of dozen of homicide cases that he presided over. They had a commonality from the garden. While on the surface, disputes that are triggered these deaths seem trivial. While on the surface, the disputes that triggered these deaths seem trivial. Each involve apparently small disagreements and a sense of being seen as inferior and unworthy of respect, which suggests that inequality raises the stakes of fights for status among men. Remember that, Southerner? The connection is so strong that according to the World Bank, a simple measure of inequality predicts about half of the variance in murder rates between American states and between countries around the world. When inequality is high and strips large numbers of men of unusual markers of status, right, like a good job and the ability to support a family, matters of respect and disrespect loom disproportionately. So I don't have anything, but you're going to respect me, right? Because, you know, inequality, they said, predicts homicide rates better than any other variable, says Martin Daly, professor of psychology and neuroscience at McMaster's University in Ontario, author of Killing the Competition, Economic Inequality and Homicide. Y'all might want to read that book. This includes factors like rates of gun ownership, which also rise when inequality does. The cultural traits placing more emphasis on honor. This too turns out to be linked with inequality, right? The South lost that war. Now they got people coming from the North telling them what to do, trying to exploit the South. And they got those people, those things that they used to just walk over, trying to stand up for themselves. About 60 academic papers show that a very common result of greater inequality is more violence, usually measured by homicide rates, they said, right? Says Richard Wilkerson, author of The Spirit Level and co-founder of the Equality Trust. According to the FBI, just over half of the murders in which the precipitating circumstances were known were set off by what is called the other argument. Not robbery, not a love triangle, not drugs, not domestic violence or money, but simply the sense that someone had been dissed, which is short for disrespected. When someone bumps into someone on the dance floor, looks too long at someone else's girlfriend, or makes an insulting remark, it doesn't threaten the self-respect of people who have other types of status. Like you got a job, you kind of doing something, you're trying to moving economically in your life, right? You have some kind of movement. It doesn't affect them, right, the way it can when you feel this is your only source of value. So respect is your only source of value because you may not have a job, right? So you're going to respect me. If your social reputation is all you got to defend it, says Daly. Inequality makes these confrontations more fraught because there's much more at stake when there are winners and losers, and you can see that you are on the track to be one of the losers. All right, so as I said, this is similar to the antebellum South that lost the war and experienced Northern occupation. I can imagine they felt quite disrespected and took their anger out on the now freed captives and the visiting Northerners responsible for their defeat, showing them in defeat why they should respect them. If you have nothing to look forward to, you can look forward to being respected. I, for one, can attest to this phenomenon. You don't need money to respect someone. It's free. Yet, if you choose to disrespect someone, it may ultimately cost you your life in the dirt or in an orange jumpsuit. That's you going to jail, just in case y'all not familiar with the orange jumpsuit metaphor. That is real, and that is the law of the hood or summons. Any sign of weakness may lead to other neighborhood predators gnawing off your disrespected carcass. The more vicious or violent you are, the more respect you get. Self-esteem and status are priceless and yet frighteningly fragile. Many gang wars have been fought because of someone felt or was disrespected. Many people are not among us for the same reason. Yet even in the hood, not everyone subscribes to this train of thought. Not everyone in the hood is going to kill you because you disrespected them. Those that do are potentially dangerous individuals, gang members, cliques, criminals, or not. Humility and respect of person, honoring life, and communication could actually save a life and save a family some grief. Seems we are hopelessly way past that. As I said, we have more deaths every 2 years than they had in the Vietnam War. We don't even have all the weapons of war. From News at Northeastern. Associated Professor of Health and Science in the says from the Bovee College of Health Science. I probably butchered that. Bovee College of Health Sciences. They did a study on different social and economic circumstances and how they drive gun violence in the U.S. The study focuses on social economic status, income, inequality, and other similar aspects known as the social determinants of health, and analyzed 13,060 gun deaths in all states of the continuous U.S., right? And they found that the strongest association was between gun homicides and social mobility, which is the ability of people to move to a higher social status than their parents, right? To do better, to succeed. So failure to thrive, right? That's what I call failure to thrive. So and I'm not making excuses for none of the gun violence. I hope nobody's taking this as, I'm trying to make excuses for gun violence, because as I said previously, like, yo, no. Why are you murdering people? Do you really have to do that? And, you know, if you're all up in your feelings, that's the first sign you don't have to do nothing like that, because you're emotional. But again, you know, they have these studies. Gun violence has reached epidemic proportions in the U.S. and is a public health crisis. On average, an estimated 100 people in the U.S. are killed with guns every day. It's 100 people. We may not be at war, but we are at war. And in the case of how black people are being disproportionately murdered, killed with guns, we are at war with ourselves. And like I said previously, I think this is an internal thing that we have to work from the inside out. Of course, I know a lot of people trying to blame the police, but police can't tell. They're not precogs. They can't tell when somebody's going to murder somebody. They can't be there to prevent a murder. They come after the fact. And if the community is not surrendering information, providing information, then a lot of times people go free. Who murder? Now, 100 times 365 is 36,500 a year. So as that's the number that they gave previously, 36,000. So it's all around the same number. It said between 2001 and 2013, firearms injuries took more lives than combined number of people killed by war, AIDS, right, pandemic, right, illegal drug overdoses, and terrorism, which we don't have a lot of terrorism here. We might have a lot of terrorist groups, but we don't have a lot of people just shooting rockets in the city and stuff like that. So social mobility impacts on an individual's feelings about how they feel about themselves, and how they feel about how you interact with them. It makes them sensitive, super sensitive is basically what this is saying. Okay, so, all right, so let's, can't argue with that. In the study, they looked at a wide range of major social determinants of health, social conditions that have been linked to mortality and many other health outcomes. I control for multiple social determinants at the same time and incorporated a range of other factors at the neighborhood level. This study found that an increase in average levels of intergenerational social mobility, our ability to climb the economic ladder compared to our parents, was linked to a 25% decrease in neighborhood gun homicide rate. So where people were able to do better, they actually, well, let's just say was linked to a 25% decrease in homicide rate. Higher levels of trust in institutions such as government, media, and corporations were associated with a 19% lower neighborhood gun homicide rate. Meanwhile, higher levels of public welfare spending were related to a 14% lower neighborhood homicide rate, while the rich-poor gap was related to an 8% higher neighborhood homicide rate. So that's poverty. That's the correlation between poverty, right, and violence. Excuse me, man. Take a sip of water. So in communities that have low levels of trust in institutions such as the police, people may choose to take the law into their own hands and resort to criminal behaviors, including homicide. Well, as I said, you know, I've seen police tell people to get a gun. That's a fact. You need a gun. You need to get a gun. Gun homicides are the second leading cause of injury death among youth and young adults. These deaths can have a sizable impact on average life expectancy. Cutting life expectancy, it has an impact on how long individuals live in general, and in the U.S., right? which has been in decline for three consecutive years for the first time in a century. By identifying and addressing the root social issues, social causes of gun homicides, we have the ability to help prevent, to help reverse these alarming trends in America. So basically, America is failing a certain portion of this country, and it is contributing to gun violence. I'm not saying, I don't think they're saying it's the only reason for the gun violence. And again, I'm not making excuses. We have a caller, 0036 is Q.
Hey, what's up, Carlo?
Rolo, what's
up? Good evening, listener. I was wondering about, you know, what you were saying about the, you know, the pattern, what they have about the revenge killing and everything like that. Maybe they could try to appeal to people's desire to keep as many friends as they can. You know what I mean? So if they have like if they lost like a certain amount of friends, you know, they had like a group of friends, let's say like 10 friends, and out of those 10 close friends this person had, maybe 3 of them are gone, or they got 7. Well, how can they concentrate on trying to keep those 7, you know, by maybe trying to get them to come to some type of terms with the, you know, whoever they're at odds with, you know what I mean? Trying to get everybody interested in preserving the friends that they have now.
Right.
Because I think them getting revenge for somebody that's not there would be secondary to them losing more friends.
Right. I haven't just saying. That's good math right there. I mean, not to be cold about it, but I mean, like, you know, you got, if you started out with 10, now you're at 8. Now you can stay at 8, maybe, try to make it stay at 8, or you can continue and subtract in friends. You know what I mean? Every year you can lose one.
Right.
Maybe twice a year you lose a friend. So that makes sense. But, like, these guys in their feelings, I saw these guys on TV, they say they don't want to do that. They had the guns. They was, you know, they were someone, yeah, we doing this. We don't want to. So they feel trapped. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And the gun culture. Whatever kind of thing they into. I don't know. Whatever it is, they felt. That particular guy was expressing that, you know, that group right there was like, they don't want to run around killing nobody, but they got to fight back. If you don't fight back, you know, you might as well just put a bullseye on your front and back and say, you know, that's what he's saying, basically. So it's sad, you know, and you know, this thing is escalating. It's not going anywhere. Guns are being sold in the community many ways. All the above, stolen purchases, legal purchases, or illegal purchases, but, you know, it's done in a legal way as far as the gun dealer is concerned. But it's illegal as far as the person is purchasing it because they actually purchased it to give it to somebody else who shouldn't have, who can't purchase a gun. So, you know, and which is another issue, you know, depending on, like, you know, if you're a convicted felon, you can't have a gun. So you actually butt naked. You know what I'm saying? So you served your time, but now you butt naked because you got people running around here doing all kinds of stuff, right? So because you can't have a gun, you can't defend yourself. You don't have a right to you don't have a Second Amendment a right because you're a convicted felon. So, which is another issue, but back for the, you know, I think that a lot of the shooting, it may start over a bump, somebody in their feelings, But like, once you kill somebody, it's nothing left but feelings. You know what I'm saying? It's bad feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so once you shoot, you don't even gotta kill nobody, really. Once you pull that gun out on somebody, you know what I'm saying? Now you got pride, you know what I'm saying? Oh, you know, we gotta show them. Don't ever, never ever attempt to pull a gun out on us. This is why you don't F with us. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's that whole thing, you know, like pride, all of that stuff, you know, people trying to be more than what they are. You don't have to pull a gun on nobody. You pulling a gun on somebody, it's ridiculous. Like, yo, you know, like the young man told me that skipping the fist fight. You don't even have to fist fight. You know what I'm saying? You don't even need to have a fist fight, for real.
Really?
You know what I'm saying? Man ain't jumping on you. Somebody running off at the mouth. You don't gotta fight him for that. Or her. Nobody needs to die because somebody's running off at the mouth. And for the people that's running off at the mouth, stop running off at the mouth. You reaching people deep inside of people and their feelings, and sometimes they find you. They find those people who touch them like that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a shame. Because, wow, dude, we have come to, and I guess a lot of this is about feelings. Even for the Southerners, it was about how they felt. They was walking around in their feelings after the war. That's why they had all these gun duels down there. Because them guys was walking around in their feelings. They done lost the war. They got folks coming out in there trying to do stuff that, hey, you can't do. And you know you would have never tried that, you know, before the war. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, they mm-hmm. but they standing up. They standing up as best they can as men, but they all in their feelings. So guys in the hood, same way. And, you know, I can see how feelings is being is, like the judge said, most of the homicide cases he resided over some nonsense. Like he's basically saying people getting killed because somebody disrespected somebody. You looking the wrong way. You bump somebody. Are you kidding? That's a death sentence. Now, if that same person that killed that person bumped somebody and the judge sentenced him to death, he would think that was wrong, right? Same person, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, no, you know, cause come on now. That's people in their feeling like I want to kill you. That's, you know, and I that's why I said in the beginning that it's an internal thing that we need to deal with. Everybody need to step back and clean themselves up. If you need help doing that, seek help. You know what I'm saying? Because you can take guns off the street. Guns ain't the only way you can kill a person. You can take every gun you want. They're kill you with their hands, run you over with a car, or baseball bat, or knives, or you know whatever. I mean, it's not. It's just the degree of lethality. So I think what we need to deal with, the reason, which is some of these guys were saying, you know, is their inability to have a meaningful life, a quality life. You know? So and what it does is perpetuates that attitude of you know, well, all I have is me, so you're gonna respect me. I don't have a nice job, you know. I don't have two nickels to rub together right now. So, but you're not gonna disrespect me. I don't have the Mercedes Benz. I'm not driving a BMW. You know, whatever, nice little car. You know, I'm not doing none of that, but you're going to respect me. You think you're better than me? Let me show you. You're not better than me. I'm going to dominate you. I'm going to put fear in your heart. You're not on my level. Don't try. You know, so this inability to succeed, basically, they're saying that we need to be, you know, provide more services for people to help them not be impoverished. That makes a lot of sense to me. Or do we want to, do we really care about 36,000 people dying every year? Only 58,220 died in the whole Vietnam War. That's ridiculous. So, you know, they said nearly 45% of poor black children live in neighborhoods with concentrated poverty, but only a little more than 12% of poor white children live in similar neighborhoods, right? So children in neighborhoods with concentrated poverty experience more social and behavioral problems, have lower test scores, and are more likely to drop out of school. Another thing that drives crime, education, right?
Mm-hmm.
Recent research suggests that reducing a child's exposure to concentrated poverty can improve their likelihood of upward economic mobility. You think? Black people make up 13% of the population. 45% of those children live in concentrated poverty. And you wonder why we're filling up the jails and the graveyards. Huh? Mm-hmm. White people make up about 60% of the population. And they have 12% of poor white of children living in concentrated poverty. That would indicate that blacks are at a higher risk of gun violence and murder by gun violence, right? USA Today, they said black boys, men and boys aged 15 to 34 make up just 2% of the nation's population. They're amongst 37% of the gun homicides. That is ridiculous. That's us. You know, and that's how I'm responding to these things that this man is being disenfranchised, being inequality, as you call it, unable to move upward. Failure to thrive. This, you know, everybody don't respond to the same thing the same way. That's why you have some people in the hood who are very sensitive about some things, right? And then you have others who not. So I can see that. Then you don't know what kind of lifestyle people are living. You don't know what they did. More blacks are murdered by gun violence in the United States. It says Chicago, 80% were black in 2020. New York, 71%. Philadelphia, 2019, African-American men made up an overwhelming majority of those killed, 73%. Black women were included. If they were included, blacks, 85%. Of those killed, even though they make up 41.5% of the city's population. Something is wrong with this picture. And, you know, as I previously said, we as individuals, as families, as communities, as a people, we need to start searching ourselves from the inside outward and do something about this problem. Because, yes, it is a problem, the things that are facilitating and impact on these people's lives. But they have no right to murder. They, you know, they have to see where this, they're on the hamster wheel. And basically just waiting for their turn. Kill until you get killed. You don't got to live like that. Stop killing. As you said, how about do it because you want to live, and like you want the man next to you to live. That's, you're gonna have to eat some of those homicides, those murders. That's the only way you're gonna do it. Because if the idea is no, I'm gonna get you back for killing my brother, then this is never gonna end, or it's gonna last a long time. So I don't have a solution. I can't offer a solution tonight except everybody reach down inside your soul. Do something about you. Start there. Start with you. And maybe this thing will spread out in your family, your community, and for us as a people. We need to start having some kind of respect for each other, for the lives of the man that looks like you. Not that you shouldn't respect everybody's lives. I'm just saying, like, yo, come on. We are way past overdue with this whole thing about, you know, changing the way that we interact with each other. It seems like it's just getting worse. So we're disproportionately impoverished, disproportionately being murdering each other through gun violence. And we can do something about that. I don't want to think that it's a hopeless situation. I hate to think that we run out of time, but did you want to say something, Q, before I close up? Okay, I guess he's gone. So, to anybody that's listening, you know, we got to stop all the shooting and murdering and stuff. Like, we need to just fall back and stop. It's too much. Not just black folks. White folks, Asians, Latinos, everybody. We need to fall. Americans, fall back on this gun violence thing. Fall back. Police, I don't know what's wrong with the police. You're supposed to be trained. Y'all shouldn't even have this situation. But fall back. Everybody, take a look. Take time out. Take a look at you. See what you can do as an individual to curb some of this violence. And you guys out there, that's hot. Start cooling yourself off. Find a way out of this situation. Find a way to make peace with the guys you're at war with. Until next week, y'all, I want to thank everybody for calling in. Listeners, downloaders, Mr. Kenneth Jones, Blog Talk Radio, We Talk Productions, and the creative. Until next week, y'all, each one reach one, each one teach one, and stop the violence. Don't let the violence stop you. Peace, y'all.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process.
there will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.